everyone, and welcome to Women's Sports Central. It is Friday, November 4th. I'm Brenda Van Lingen, along with Michelle Vopel, and we have a lot of things to get to today, everywhere from little women's hoops news to volleyball and soccer and field hockey, and so a lot going on. We want to get right to it. Of course, we both, Michelle and I, were at the WEPAC game, the charity basketball game last weekend. If you haven't seen it yet, it's still replaying on FSN, so check your Fox Sports listings to see if you can catch a replay of that game, because it was a lot of fun. And I am joined by Michelle Vopel. And Michelle, you've had quite a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy for me, the fan me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're in sports media, you don't really get to be a fan that much. It's just not part of your job description. Your job description is you're covering events, and your objectivity is paramount. And it's actually not that hard to do. People, I think, often think that we're totally biased one way or another. But the truth is, when you're covering stuff, you deal with both sides. You deal with people from all across the country, and it's very natural to, you know, really just look at, you know, whoever's playing a game and appreciate both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So you know this because you're in broadcasting, and you don't really take sides, because it doesn't really matter in how you're doing your job.
Right.
You're there covering an event, and you might say, oh, this would be a better story. You know, boy, this would be more exciting if this happened. But you're not actively rooting for either side.
Right.
It doesn't have any impact on what you're going to be doing as your job. You calling a game, or me writing about a game.
Well, and as a broadcaster, sometimes a game is going a certain way, and one team might be playing better than the other, and so you end up talking about the positives of why they're playing better, and some people may perceive that you are for one team or the other, but it certainly isn't the case, and we work to be impartial in all that we do and how we report, but you've gotten a chance really to be a fan because of the St. Louis Cardinals. They're so near and dear to your heart. When we did the show last week, we recorded on Thursday. That was before that amazing, incredible Thursday night game. And I know that was incredible for you.
It really was. And I think that reminds me, not that I forget, but it does remind me of how fun it is to be a fan in sports. Major League Baseball is the sport I let myself be a fan in, because I don't ever cover it. I did, actually, when I was with the Stars, so I had to temper my fandom during that time. I didn't do a lot of it, but whenever I did, I had to turn off the fan and just be a reporter. But I don't cover Major League Baseball, and I have followed the Cardinals ever since since I can remember. I can remember being 4 and 5 years old and watching baseball, getting into it. So when we talked last week, when we recorded our show, the Cardinals are down 3-2. They're, we have no idea what's going to go on that night. And, what we ended up seeing was this unbelievable game, and the reporter in me is thinking, oh my gosh, this is heck on deadline because of the twists and turns. And the reporter in me is also thinking, boy, I bet it's tough in the Rangers locker room, because you still have that feeling of what it's like for the other side. But the fan in me went berserk, and it was so much fun, and that game is over, and I'm so energized that I then drove to Wichita, got there at about 4 a.m, got up at 8:00, and went to Coldwater, Kansas, and I'm telling you, I felt wide awake the whole time, except for the about 4 hours that I slept. Felt wide awake, was listening to sports talk radio about this amazing game, and it really was a lot of fun to experience the fan side of things. And I know you have that, the same kind of experiences that you've had occasionally where you get to be a fan.
Right. And I grew up in Nebraska, and so the Husker football is is part of my blood, part of my DNA. And I even tell people that that's probably kind of where I got the bug to be a sports announcer, because my dad helped my grandpa farm, and in the fall we would be harvesting Milo, and my dad would drive the combine up and down the field. When he'd come back to dump the grain in the truck, he would want my report on what was happening in the Husker football game. So I would have to remember who carried it and who scored and turnovers and punts and things like that and report it to my dad. And so, Husker football's been part of my DNA for a long time. But even this summer with the Women's World Cup, I really found myself being a fan, in that I was screaming at the television and getting excited about the game. And it was a good reminder, because so often, as the impartial observer for the games, you don't feel that the frustration, the excitement, all of the things that fans feel. And so that was fun this summer to get a chance to do that. And I'm glad for you, for the Cardinals. I know all the Rangers fans are still shaking their head and just can't believe how that one got away. But I know as a Cardinal fan, it was pretty incredible for you.
And it's really also a reminder, and we get this a lot in sports. We don't necessarily need the reminder, but these things hit people differently. You know, I was, watching this game, and four, I would say at the very least, four times in this game, I made peace with the fact that the Cardinals were not going to win the World Series. You know, I was like, you know what, they're not going to win, and it's okay. The Rangers fans had suffered long and hard for so many years, have never won a title. Cardinals have won 10 of them. It was utterly unexpected they were even in the playoffs. And Brenda, you had to endure a breakfast with me where I believe I told you the entire history of this season in about 5 minutes. I was like, okay, it's not going to happen. And disappointed, but not, crushed. But then when the Cardinals tied the game in the ninth inning, then I was just totally swept up. Mm-hmm. And then Josh Hamilton hits a home run in the 10th inning, and I'm like, I can't believe I have to drive to Wichita now, when I'm this sad that, we came back and then, we're going to lose this. And yes, I just use we. Tried not to, but you can't help it. And then when David Freese hits his home run, Cardinals tie it again, which was amazing to tie a game, to be down two runs twice in the ninth and the tenth and tie it. David Freese hits his home run. And then I think, you know what, I'm pretty sure I could just float to Wichita right now. I might not even need my car. And what a feeling that is. But then especially when you look back and you can't recapture how exciting it is in the moment, but it's also kind of fun to watch it again. It's almost like knowing you were able, your team was able to get across, the river full of piranhas, as opposed to falling in where you're so nervous while it's going on. And then you have this sense when you're watching it again, it's maybe not as exciting, but it's so comforting to know they're not going to lose this. They're going to be down to their last strike twice. And if you're a Rangers fan, and believe me, I really do have empathy for what that must feel like, you probably think, I would not watch the last three innings of that game again for $1 billion, right? Because it would just be too hard. And that's sports. Mm-hmm. You're on this high, or you're, on one of your lowest lows, and it may be crazy, but it affects us that way.
Yeah, it's amazing the emotion that sports invokes. And so thank you to our audience for indulging us a little bit as we talk about that. And it's not all women's sports, but just our experience with sports. And, when you talk about passionate fans for a team, maybe none as passionate or few as passionate as the fans of the Tennessee Lady Vols, and an opportunity for not only those people that are directly fans of that program, but people that are fans of women's basketball or women's sports overall, have felt the heartbreak of Pat Summitt making the announcement about her diagnosis of dementia. And tonight on ABC, Robin Roberts of 2020 is going to be interviewing Pat Summitt. And I think it will be a great opportunity for all of us to hear how things are going in her journey. And I think that's just such a, it's such an important thing that Pat is doing, sharing this with all of us. I think so many people will be impacted by her being so strong in this fight. I'm really looking forward to that interview tonight.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're having a chance to see this with an interviewer who really is so knowledgeable about Pat Summitt's career. You know, it's Robin Roberts knows women's basketball so well, and I think that brings added depth to what we're going to see tonight. I mean, she knows women's basketball well. She knows Pat Summitt well. I think everybody really is still, and I talked to all the coaches, as I'm sure you did, at Big 12 Media Day about Pat, and everybody is a little bit still in shock,
yeah.
You know, even a couple months after the announcement about
right.
what she's facing, what she's going through. I talked to a couple of her players just yesterday, Shakina Strickland and Glory Johnson, and they said, you know, as tough as it's been and as much as it's been scary to them and worrisome to them, Pat has made it a background thing. You know, she has said, okay, we know we're all dealing with this, and it's going to change some things about the dynamics of what responsibilities the assistants handle. Everybody's going to take on a little bit different role. But the bottom line is we're playing for a national championship this year. And that, to me, is so indicative of the strength of this person. You know, we also talked to Shamequa Holtzclaw at the WEPAC game, and she said the exact same thing. And I believe she even, you know, during the broadcast was talking about how Pat was actually comforting her
right.
About all this. And I think that people who follow women's basketball know all this about Pat. It's just going to reaffirm it. But this is also going to reach out to all the people who watch 2020 who maybe don't know her as anything other than a name attached to a number. And I think that's a very important thing to see the real person and for what it's going to mean to hopefully increase awareness about research for dementia and other, you know, diseases of this sort that we need, you know, we need to have contributions to research for them the same way we do for cancer.
Yes, and I had a chance to see a segment, a preview of it, and she is being interviewed along with her son, Tyler, and they mentioned in this brief excerpt that after she found out, after she was diagnosed, they found out that there were 4 cases in the history of their family, so it was definitely a part of the family and something that you know, she is attacking head on, and I know it's personal to so many people. You and I have met with and spoken with Pat in so many different instances over the years, but Alzheimer's is a part of my family history as well, and it's so encouraging to see somebody like Pat, let's just say, to see Pat Summitt attack this disease with such strength. And in the interview, Tyler is asked, how does, you know, knowing this is in his family, what does he think? He says, well, I will follow my mom's example, and I would attack it the same way she does. And I think a lot of people will also follow her lead, as she's been a leader in so many things. This is such a position of strength that she will help, as you said, raise money and awareness about this disease, but also help so many people attack it and approach it in a different way so that as much of quality of life can be attained as possible.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that what she's doing takes enormous courage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. It's something that she could have kept to herself still, and I believe the, you know, UT family would have kept that secret with her. For an indefinite time, and instead she decided to be, you know, just confront it head on publicly, which takes a lot of guts, and it's going to do a lot of good. I think in spite of all that, we have to remember, and you and I talked about this, this is a human being facing a very personal and very difficult struggle, and so I'm hoping that, you know, people in the media, fans, we'll remember that too. As much as we're all sort of hoping to share in boosting Coach Summit, because I think everybody wants to do that. We also need to sort of respect her privacy and respect her wishes that every conversation isn't going to be about this.
Right.
You know, she's about winning a national championship, and she's going to do everything she can, you know, to win that national championship this year. And she's got a heck of a good team to do it.
It would be number 9 if they win the championship this year. And we look forward to talking more about the women's hoop season next week, as it will be the opening of all the regular season games. We're in the middle of exhibition week right now, but next week we'll talk more about the upcoming NCAA women's basketball games. But after we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little soccer as the conference championships are heating up, and volleyball as well, some big news there, and a very interesting story in field hockey as well. So join us after the break. This is Brenda Van Lingen and Michelle Vopel on Women's Sports Central. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Women's Sports Central on womenssportscentral.com. You can follow Brenda and Michelle on Twitter by following Brenda at Brenda Van Lingen, VanLengen, or Michelle at Michelle V, and it's spelled MECHELLEV. You can also follow us on a new Twitter account, Women's Sports Central. It's abbreviated Women's Sports CEN, and you can follow us on Twitter. You can also like Brenda on Facebook at BV on TV, etc. All right, welcome back to Women's Sports Central. Brenda Van Lingen along with Michelle Vopel. We're going to talk a little NCAA soccer right now. It's been dominated so many years by North Carolina, but when you look at the top 10 this year, there's no North Carolina, and there aren't many teams that have even won a national championship. There's a little excitement at the top this year in soccer, Michelle.
It really is. So I don't know if you want to necessarily call it a breakthrough year, but certainly you could call it that, or you could at least call it one of the breakthrough years in soccer. And no disrespect to North Carolina, they've obviously been the flagship program of women's collegiate soccer. 20 times they've been the NCAA champion. But we look at the poll this week, and you go through the top 10. There's only one team in the top 10 that's won an NCAA title, and that's number 7, Santa Clara. They won back in 2001. Among your top 5 teams, you've got number 1, Stanford, that's knocked on the door but hasn't won a title yet. Number 2, Oklahoma State, which is a great story here in the heartland, a program that's not even that old but has risen to near the top of women's soccer and could become the first Big 12 team to go to the Women's College Cup. Number 3, Duke, which, you know, has, boy, talk about being in the shadow. Duke has been big time in women's soccer with North Carolina on Tobacco Road, but Duke right now is number 3 in the country. Number 4, UCLA. Number 5, Virginia. So none of those teams have won an NCAA title. You look at another team that's won 3, you know, it's almost been like the number 2 team in women's soccer behind North Carolina, and there are ways behind, but Notre Dame, which has won 3 NCAA titles, they're not even ranked. So, you know, we could very well have a first-time winner. It could happen. And you could have a college cup, you know, the women's soccer's Final Four. You'd have a college cup that looks different than any previous college cup, and that's kind of exciting. North Carolina lost for the first time ever, lost outright. It wasn't a tie and a shootout. Lost to Florida State in the quarterfinals of the ACC tournament. And that's an amazing, amazing run that that the Tar Heels had. But it really, you know, signals at least, like I said, a change in the overall dynamic of the sport, that you don't necessarily know what you're going to see when it comes College Cup time.
Well, and the change in the sport that you're talking about, you and I off-air discussed this a little bit. It's not insignificant that the fact that the players that are college age right now were 7, 8, and 9 years old when the women's U.S. team won the World Cup in 1999. You think that really has an impact?
I do. I don't think it can be discounted when you look at you know, who were the most impressionable people in the country with that great 99 World Cup. We called them, jokingly, the pigtail hooligans. We called all those little girls that were screaming, Mia, 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 until we thought we were going to go crazy at soccer matches. And we're screaming for Brandy and screaming for Julie Foudy. All those little kids who were watching are college-age women right now. And they have had something, you know, to even though women's soccer has been through its tough times with the pro league and different things they've faced, it's had a much higher elevation thanks to the World Cup and thanks to, you know, those stars from the 1999 team than it had ever had before. So this group of girls who are now 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, they were the pigtailed hooligans when Brandy, you know, got her famous penalty kick. And when women's soccer was the biggest story of the summer of 1999, you look at that age group now, and they're dispersed across the country. First of all, there's more of them. They can't all go to North Carolina. It's not possible for North Carolina to get every top recruit because there's too many good players. So they've dispersed across the country. Their skills are better. Their confidence is higher. And what you're seeing now, we always talk about what impact big women's sports events make. And sometimes people don't understand. I think often they don't understand. You don't see the impact maybe the next year or the year after that. But in a decade, or 12 years is the case now, you're seeing that impact. It's real, it's tangible, and it's really exciting.
And you think about the time frame too, the late 90s was such an emergence in women's sports in so many ways, and it's when the WNBA was formed, and think about who was the first dynasty in women's basketball, is the Houston Comets, and how many incredible players, college players, are out of the community of Houston right now. Is sort of a similar parallel track that you're talking about, but it's having an impact on the dispersal of talent and the rising number of players that are at that skill level, and it's making an impact on, as we said earlier, of the top 10 teams, only one of them has ever won a national championship, and that was back in 2001, Santa Clara.
Yeah, and you know, we'll see if, you know, I don't want to say, oh, this means North Carolina can't suddenly turn it on and, you know, win another title. But the odds now are that it's much tougher for a team like that to win a championship. And you're absolutely right. We see those parallels in women's basketball. Houston's a great example. You know, you look at, you know, I was just thinking about this the other day, how many players have come out of the greater Houston area, how many are going to be impact players. And in fact, probably, I think the best players in the country, several of them are from Houston. Brittany Griner, Nneka Ogumike, her sister Shanae Ogumike, Kelsey Bone. I'm sure there are plenty of others that are from the Houston area. And you're right. You asked those kids, and they all said, yes, we watched the Houston Comets.
Yeah.
They were a big deal in our lives and a big deal in their stage of development that they were in when they start. Most of them was when they were starting, competitive basketball as kids.
Yeah, absolutely cannot be discounted. You mentioned earlier that Oklahoma State in soccer is a great story. They're the number two ranked team in the country, and they are going into the Big 12 championships this week. The finals will be on FSN on Sunday afternoon. This is a real breakthrough for the Cowgirls.
It is, and it's nice to see the school making the decision to add women's soccer for them to have this success relatively soon in the development. I believe it's been about 15 years that they've had a soccer program, and to look at that really relatively short history to all of a sudden to make it this far. One thing that's interesting about Oklahoma State as well is who's going to be their rivals in soccer in the quote-unquote new Big 12. Texas A&M has been one of the better teams. They're ranked right now. They're going to be going to the SEC. Nebraska was a long-time success in women's soccer. and they've gone to the Big Ten. So that's one of the, you know, I guess continuing challenges that Oklahoma State will face is not just establishing itself, but, you know, hoping that the Big 12 and whatever final configuration we get into, which we still don't know, of course, that they build the profile in their conference as well, and then schedule some really good non-conference games. But it is nice to see this happening for the Cowgirls.
And a lot of conference championships will be this weekend, so check your local listings. Flip around on all those Fox Sports regional channels, as there will be a number of conference championships played out in soccer over the weekend. So let's take a break and come back and talk a little volleyball, as a lot of shakeup last week. We talked about all those top teams playing one another last weekend, so there's been quite a shakeup and some off-the-court stories as well. This is Women's Sports Central. Welcome back to Women's Sports Central. Brenda Van Lingen along with Michelle Vopel, and let's turn our attention to a little volleyball. As we mentioned on last week's show, a lot of the top teams played one another. And so each of the top five teams in the country last week were beaten. And UCLA vaulted from number six up to number one as they beat both Stanford and Cal last weekend. And for the first time in the season, UCLA sits atop the volleyball standings.
UCLA is a program that runs a lot of really quick offensive sets. They really make it tough on defenders because it's almost like just a machine gun type offense that they have. And they were able to do, you know, what nobody else in the top five was able to do, which was to come through this past weekend, which, like you talked about, was a really big weekend with matchups both in the Pac-12 and in the Big Ten. They were able to be the ones that came out unscathed, so they jump all the way from number six to number one. The previous number one team, Nebraska, had a pretty tough week. They have lost to Penn State at Penn State, and then some difficult issues with Lauren Cook, their setter. She's been suspended for two games, and it makes it all the more sort of difficult for them because her father is the coach. I mean, there's just no getting around that, Brenda. That's a hard situation for John Cook and Lauren Cook and the Huskers to be in.
Well, it really is, and she is their setter. We've talked in the past that they had the shared setter position with Sydney Anderson last year, but she is the quarterback of the team, and so taking her out of the equation and suspending her for at least two games, and who knows how much more with the legal situation. And if you haven't heard what the legal situation is, that she was driving on a suspended license and actually clipped a couple of motorcycle riders who were on the edge of the street and then left the scene in a panic, realized that she had done the wrong thing and called the police just a few minutes later, but was arrested for leaving the scene. And so in John Cook's statement, he said that she would be suspended for these two games, and then they would have to allow the legal process to evolve. And so we still don't know what the status is going to be, but obviously it will have a huge impact on the team, and just a poor set of decisions off the court impacting a team that was last week sitting in number one in the nation. So that will have an impact on Nebraska as well as the standings overall.
Yeah, number one's been a little bit of a hot potato for volleyball. You had Illinois, you know, had gone into that slot for the first time in program history. The Illini hadn't lost at all this season. They lose to Nebraska. Nebraska jumps to number one. You know, we had a team like, you know, Cal was, you know, sort of knocking on the door at number one. They lost twice. And this past week they lost both to UCLA and USC. You have Stanford, which, you know, also, you know, probably thinks, you know, it might have an eye on number one.
Sure.
Washington was another team that, you know, earlier in the season was, I believe, as high as number two. Now UCLA. We'll see if the Bruins can stay firmly a top number one. It's tough. I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of like we always talk during a Big 12 basketball season about, you know, how difficult it is to sustain a winning streak. And it's like that in different sports, depending on how tough your conference is. But mm-hmm. Pac-12 volleyball is absolutely very, very difficult. And the Big Ten is the same way. So if you ask me right now, I don't know if you have any strong feelings, Brenda, but if you ask me right now who I think are going to be the Final Four teams in volleyball in San Antonio, I'm like, can I tell you maybe, you know, like the day before the Final Four starts? Because I do not know. It's going to be very interesting. I don't want to leave out Hawaii. We haven't really talked right. about them. They're, you know, a zillion miles away, and people forget about them, which they hate, and I understand, but they're a really good program, mm-hmm. and they host a regional, which is a really big advantage. If you're in Hawaii, you host a regional, the conference, or basically the nation's attendance leaders in volleyball, we could see them in San Antonio. Right. Don't know that they're going to lose another match. Mm-hmm. They're in the WAC. They have played very well in the WAC. And last year were upset in the WAC tournament, but I don't know if that's going to happen to Hawaii this year. They could really come into the NCAA tournament on a big head of steam.
Yeah, they're ranked number 8 in the country right now, and right behind them is Texas, and Texas is very much in the driver's seat in the Big 12 right now. Iowa State was the co-leader last weekend, but Iowa State lost at Texas, so the Cyclones' two losses are to Texas. The only loss for Texas was at Oklahoma earlier this year, and you know, without Nebraska in the conference not as top-heavy, but top to bottom, the Big 12 still very strong. There are 9 teams that play in the Big 12. Again, the strange number thing, because there are 10 institutions, but only 9 play volleyball. And 8 of the 9 teams in the Big 12 are in the top 45 RPI. So it just speaks to the strong nature of the Big 12. So Texas lurking in number 9, and I think getting stronger throughout the year.
And that could definitely be something we watch for. The Longhorns have made the last three Final Fours. They haven't won a championship in that time. I think their 5-set loss to Penn State was really difficult for them a couple of years ago.
Yep.
But even though they lost Julianne Fawcett, they have come back very, very strong this season. And I think you're right that Texas is sort of just lurking mm-hmm. there. And speaking of lurking, not that they've really lurked, because they should be on the front of everybody's minds, but watch out for Penn State.
Oh, yeah.
They just beat Nebraska. They have all these young kids. They have a team that relies a lot on freshmen, but they are very, very good freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not going to say by any means that I would be surprised if we didn't see number 5 come out of Penn State. It's going to be tough for them because they do have a lot of competition, but they certainly are going to be in the running again for a national championship.
Yeah, they looked incredible against Nebraska watching that match. I know they have a definite home court advantage, but a lot of teams do that pack those smaller gymnasiums with you know, thousands of fans for volleyball. But Penn State on the court looked very impressive in their win against Nebraska. So, yeah, I don't think anybody's counting them out for sure. And, you know, a sport that we don't talk about very much, Michelle, but had a very intriguing story this last week is field hockey. Tell people about the story that's worth sharing there.
Yeah, it's not something, obviously, in the Midwest that people play as much. It's largely an East Coast sport, but it can be a very fun sport to watch, especially on the highest level. And the highest level has been the ACC. The North Carolina and Maryland have combined to win the last 6 NCAA championships. And right now, North Carolina is on a high, thanks in large part to a kid named Caitlin Fajowski. And she had a pretty amazing past weekend. On Friday, she's in Mexico, helps the United States team win gold in the Pan Am Games, flies back to the United States on Saturday, and then on Sunday, she and the Tar Heels are in Norfolk, Virginia, playing number 1 Old Dominion. And Caitlin has the assist on the winning goal in overtime. as number two, North Carolina beats number one, Old Dominion. So it propels North Carolina, I think, to potentially the number one seed in the NCAA tournament. We'll have to see how it all plays out this weekend in the ACC field hockey tournament, which is usually almost like kind of like a mini NCAA tournament usually, because there's so much strength in the ACC in that sport. But if anybody's interested in seeing field hockey at the top level, you have an opportunity to noon Central Time on Sunday on the Fox Regional Networks. You'll see the ACC final, and very well could have North Carolina, and, you know, like I said, likely will be a little bit of a precursor to what we'll see in field hockey's Final Four, which is in Louisville this year, by the way. So it's a little bit of ways away from the East Coast, but you know, it is, like I said, it's a sport that Midwesterners, a lot of them, are not as familiar with. But if you want to see a chance or have a chance of seeing it at a really high level, watching the ACC final is a good way to do that.
Well, and you thought you had a crazy travel week, and Caitlin Fajowski,
yeah,
I think, has you
on
that
one.
Yeah,
and I was just driving and riding. Yeah, I wasn't, you know, out. And, well, you watch that sport. It takes some guts to play field hockey. I want to say that ball is not soft. And they don't wear a lot of protective equipment. They have to have, you know, they're pretty brave out there, and it's a lot more physical than people may realize.
Yeah.
So it's fun to watch the best teams play. They're very, very skilled.
People should take advantage of that as you're watching for women's sports on television. You'll see, as we mentioned, a lot of soccer conference championships this weekend, as well as the field hockey championship. So it's worth tuning into and having an opportunity to check out a variety of sports. Any parting shots before we go, Michelle?
Real quick, USA volleyball team beat Brazil in the opener of the World Championship, which is being played right now in Japan. That'll be played throughout the month of November. And for people who want to check out some of these matches, because Team USA has some of the top names that those of you who followed women's college volleyball for the last few years, those players are now with Team USA. And if you have a chance to watch some of these matches on Universal Sports on the Internet. So if you know, want to check that out, like I said, it's some really, really, I mean, the top women's volleyball teams in the world are playing in it. You can watch those matches. The USA-Brazil match, the one I'm referencing that just happened, where USA beat number one Brazil, and of course Brazil's the reigning Olympic champion, that's going to be broadcast on Universal Sports on November 8th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So you'll see matches with the USA. In fact, I think almost every USA match is going to be broadcast on Universal Sports all the way through November 24th. So volleyball fans, get yourself familiar with Universal Sports and a chance to see Team USA, the team that's, you know, largely that team is going to be the one that goes to London for the Olympics.
Great stuff. Thank you, Michelle, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Hope you join us once again next Friday on Women's Sports Central. On behalf of Michelle Vopel, I'm Brenda Van Lingen. Have a great weekend, everyone.